The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect with me, Stephen Scott.
And me, Jill Barclay.
Yes, we're back again for another hour talking about the issues that matter to you if you're blind or partially sighted. This is a place where literally anything goes, Jill. Anything.
What, anything?
Well, I said this last week to you, right? Not everything you want to talk about, because some of it, let's be fair, might not be for a family show.
Right, okay, Stephen.
That's all I'm saying. But other than that, absolutely, let's talk about stuff. And do you know what? Maybe we should get into some darker topics from time to time. I think we should be brave here.
Oh, definitely. But I don't think you could get as dark as I can be, Stephen. So we'll maybe leave that till after the watershed.
Yeah, I think we need a Weekly Connect nighttime edition for you, just for you. Okay, so this week we, as always, have a special guest with us. We're going to be meeting Chris Thorley in a moment. But if anybody wants to be part of this programme, anybody can, Jill, can't they? I mean, that's the whole point.
Yes, they can indeed. And you can get in touch in all the usual ways. You can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk.
Or, of course, you can find us on Twitter. We're on social media for the young people out there and the young at heart at RNIB Radio. And we're also on Facebook and all those other fancy social media places. I don't do as much social media these days, Jill. Are you a social media person?
Do you know something? I used to be a bit more, and I managed to kind of stay away from Facebook for so many years. And then I started up my own little business a couple of years ago, and I purely for that reason got onto Facebook alone. But then I got fed up with it, and I
purely for financial reasons.
Yes,
that was it. Yeah,
okay. That was it for it. So now I just share kind of jokes and silly stuff. I don't really use it that much, to be honest.
Okay, well, if you do use it, then you can. You can get in touch with us that way. We might not use it personally so much, but we certainly do for work. So RNIB Radio is how you'll find us on Twitter, at RNIB Radio, or on Facebook. You can just search for RNIB Connect Radio, and there we are. So that's coming up. We're going to be talking to Chris here on The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
So let's meet Chris. Now, Chris, tell us a bit about yourself. Where are you from, first of all, Chris?
Hello, and how are you both? Yeah, I'm Chris Thorley, and I live in Newcastle-under-Lyme, which is a borough next door to Stoke-on-Trent in the Midlands.
Excellent. So that's where you're from. And this week, we know that you want to come on and talk about a wide range of topics, I guess. I mean, all kind of under one topic. And maybe we should call this improvement. How about that for a word? Improvement, where we, you know, where things could be better. And I know that's very much a theme of yours, Chris, that you want to, especially here at RNIB, you want to make RNIB better through work you do. So I guess we need to unpack a little bit of what you think isn't great about it at the moment, and then maybe talk a little bit about the things you'd like to see improved. But I think as well as that, maybe we need to understand a bit more about you as a person, what you actually do. And I know you've been involved heavily in a lot of campaigning, so we'll maybe talk about that. But if you don't mind me asking, first of all, just because we do this on the show, we like to share, you know, can you tell us a bit about your eye condition, if you don't mind? You know, what is your eye condition, and have you always had a visual impairment?
Okay, well, my eye condition is myopia CNV, which is a macular eye condition whereby you lose your central vision. It's brought about, in my case, by extreme short-sightedness. So I was born very short-sighted, minus 26, which is pretty bad, resulting in wearing very thick glasses. By the time I was 9 years old, my mother was advised to take me to the contact lens practitioner at the hospital and get contact lenses. So that's kind of how I got through life up until the age of 49, when things really went wrong. The myopia CMV got me in both eyes. It got me in my right eye when I was 22. So I lost my central vision then, but I continued to drive, run a business, do everything. It wasn't easy, but I could do it. But by the time I was 49, I got it in my left eye, which kind of stopped me gallop. So yeah, myopia CMV, central vision loss. So I have peripheral vision, but not central. And that's kind of it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your campaign work, because one of the things, since you've been losing more of your vision, I know you've been doing a lot of campaigning. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so I guess really the last 12 months I've become a campaigner. I don't call myself a campaigner, really, but I guess I have been campaigning quite heavily about many issues. 7 years ago, I did do campaigning maybe 7 years ago for the RNIB over a number of years, but never really felt as if I was a campaigner. I was more interested in working with people on a one-to-one, or as a speaker to a group, or as a tech talker, or as a befriender, or as many hats I wore for a number of years, up until last year. So I was volunteering for different organisations, doing all kinds of things. But last year, something personal happened to me, and I responded, and how I responded brought about lots of awareness, and so I became this lunatic campaigner. And we achieved great things by doing what we did. And there you go, that's where I am. That's where I am now. But as a side project, I was looking at other charities and organizations. And I guess I'd kind of got it in for the RNIB, to be honest with you. Maybe. I just thought, when I've got the chance, when I've got the opportunity, I'm gonna have a dig at the RNIB. And actually, the opportunity came up when I was in the middle of campaigning, because they never took the opportunity to get involved in what I was involved in. They never really showed any interest. And I talked to many people at the RNIB, many people in management. I was getting to people, and I thought, these people should be supporting what I'm doing, but they weren't. So I began to challenge them on social media and using other avenues, other routes, and I started to get to people and talk to people. But of course, it was kind of on a, it was very challenging. It was challenging for them and for me, and we never really got anywhere.
So what was it that you were looking RNIB to support you with at the time? What was this campaign?
It was getting very political. I was challenging NICE, the National Institute for Care and Health Excellence. I was challenging clinical commission groups. I was challenging senior management at the NHS. Executive management in any organisation, really, I was challenging. So it was all to do with a drug that I needed that was available in Scotland and Wales. It's a drug called Eylea that they inject into your eye. I was having treatment by having Lucentis, a drug called Lucentis, injected into my eye, but that had stopped working. What this drug does is stabilizes a bleed at the back of the eye. Hopefully, if they inject the drug, it stabilizes the bleed. It acts like a plaster, really, like sticking a plaster on your knee. So Lucentis, I was being treated with Lucentis, but it stopped working. I needed Eylea. Eylea wasn't available in England, but it was available in Scotland and Wales. So that is really where it all began. I had to apply to the local clinical commission group for the drug Eylea. That's the process that you have to go to. But I had to convince my consultant over a number of months to apply for it, because I had to go through him. Finally convinced him, after having a kind of interview with three consultants asking me why I should go and do this, managed to convince the three consultants, and we applied for the drug. This was October 2016. We applied for the drug, the application went in. It was shelved by December 2016, but I didn't find out about it until June last year, June 2017. And when I did find out that that we were getting no further with it, I didn't know where I was in the process. I then tried to make an appointment with the clinical commission group. I couldn't get through on the phone. I couldn't get through to anybody. Nobody knew anything. it was a complete mess, so I decided to pay a visit to the local clinical commission group. When I got to the local clinical commission group, after a little bit of research, I'd got to break in there, get past security. I'd got to call unannounced with no appointment, which is what I did do. Finally got in the office, was surrounded by security for being in there, and kind of all hell broke loose in there, really. It made it into the local newspapers. I did get to directors of the clinical commission group. I called again a week later, finally got an apology, a letter of apology and admission that they'd been negligent. But we went on from there, really. So the campaigning was all about getting the drug Eylea available in England. We finally achieved this. It was the first drug ever to be fast-tracked by NICE. It was fast-tracked and published November the 1st last year. So it is now available for people with my condition.
And did you receive the treatment eventually? Did you receive the treatment eventually?
Yes, I had one injection of a course of three, and that kind of stabilised the condition, yeah.
And do you feel that if you had had this drug sooner, that it maybe would have helped?
Yeah, very, very possible, yeah. Jill. Yeah, very possible. Mm. But the thing was, I try to not do it for myself, but for everyone. So my mistake was asking everyone, the clinical commission group, the consultant, to do this, to set the precedent for others to follow. Get the drug for me and we'll get it for everybody. And that's the route I went. But unfortunately, the clinical commission groups don't know how to process that. They want to look at it either as an exceptional case, as an individual, you're applying for the drug, or for a cohort of people. Either way, you're going to lose. They're going to shelve that application. Ridiculous situation.
Absolutely. And of course, with you not receiving the drug, you know, when you could have possibly received it, and obviously now, you know, it's maybe had a detrimental effect on the amount of sight you have now, you know, maybe a little more could have been saved. But that must have left you very, very frustrated.
I became very busy, Jill, to be honest. Frustration didn't come into it. I just became very busy and thought, we're going to get this fixed. And we did. Oh, luck was involved, I guess. But a lot of effort was put in. And a lot of people like NICE. I came face-to-face with the CEO, Sir Andrew Dillon, and the chairman, David Haslam, at NICE. And questioned these people, along with a lady, a partner in crime of mine on occasion, Elaine Shaw. We challenged them face to face, and the questions that we put to them and their answers were inappropriate and not correct. So we challenged many people and continue to do so. Even this week we've been in London talking to the health minister this very week. So
right.
It goes on, and it's multifaceted, and I could take up the whole show really talking about this.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a fascinating topic, and it's great. It's really interesting to hear you talk about it, because obviously it means a lot to you. Now, I know that one of you said earlier about RNIB and its involvement in it. So how did RNIB fit into that, and what was your thoughts on that?
They kind of came into it towards the end of the year. We had meetings with your eye health department. I don't know if I should, I won't name the people, but so we had meetings. It was brought up in the House of Commons, and Steve Bryan was asked, Conservative MP, Health Minister, was asked if he would meet with Elaine Shaw, the lady that I've mentioned before, meet up with the RNIB and the Macular Society. So even though the RNIB had played no part in it, with that question being asked in the House of Commons, the RNIB suddenly became part of it. So we had meetings with the RNIB, but it was so dissatisfactory that Elaine Shaw and myself decided that we did not want to work with them on this. And so I made sure that they were blown out of the water and they didn't attend any meetings with us, any further meetings. They did not have knowledge on the subject. They were not well researched, and they didn't come across as competent or confident. They were talking more in the defence of people like NICE and the authorities, whereas we were challenging them. So we marched on alone, or with the Macular Society. The Macular Society were involved and did support us, as you would expect a charity to do. So the RNIB were nowhere to be seen. And
so was that the point that you felt maybe it's time to give them a poke in the side?
I decided that before, Stephen, to be honest. I'd already started to do that before, because I had to put a tweet out last year asking for people with myopia CMV to get in touch with me. And within 2 days, the RNIB did the same thing. And I thought, what's this all about? So I started to look into it. I started to talk to people at iHealth in London at the RNIB, and discovered that I knew more than they did, which was very worrying. So that is kind of, we couldn't work with them. There's no way that we could work with these people. But so I'd started to do that before, asking the question, why since 1868 is it that you've only just discovered the condition myopia CMV, and questions like that, you know.
And did you think at that stage, and I'm being a bit of a devil's advocate here, obviously, because that's my
of
job.
Course.
But did you think, you know, upon reflection of that, do you think that was a fair question in the sense of, you know, of course there are many different eye conditions, there are many different...
200 approx, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is it fair to assume the knowledge, that RNIB has the knowledge of every one of those conditions in detail? Is that a fair question, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think it's been around for 150 years this year. It's a big organisation, the biggest eye loss charity in the country. I think that they should know their business. If they were a business, I live in, as I say, next door to Stoke-on-Trent. We're famous for pottery in Stoke-on-Trent. If the RNIB were a pottery factory and they've got to make so many teacups by the end of the week and they hadn't made them, and they hadn't made them properly, put the glaze on properly, or and they got nothing to sell, they would be out of business. The same should apply to the RNIB. They should know their business from top to bottom. And that is it. The RNIB should know their business.
And I think we'd all agree that's the case. But I guess my question to you is, as is the case, I mean, I had a situation in my own life where my wife and I were trying to buy a house, and we couldn't get the particular mortgage product that I wanted from this bank I had found I'd sourced online, and the bank denied it existed. And I said, well, hang on a minute. This is your bank. I know it exists because I found details of it, because it was in a business journal, and I happened to be Googling around and I found it. And, you know, after a lot of time and effort, they found it. And they said, oh, actually, yeah, we had no idea we had that. And I guess I'm not saying that equates at all, but what I'm thinking is that, is it the case that sometimes it's just who you speak to, and that perhaps, you know, going to the organisation and saying, well, you know, who does know about this? You know, and it's up to the organisation then, quite rightly, to then put forward a question to its staff saying, right, who knows about this condition and what do we need to know? I think that would be my takeaway from that, you know, we can't, you know, not everyone can know everything. So someone might need access to that information, and maybe they just didn't have it at that point you asked. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that might be the reason why that happened.
Okay, so let's say that they don't know about all 200 eye conditions.
Person you speak to, that's what I mean. The person that's answered the call to you might not know 200 eye conditions or every detail of them.
Well, this is the 21st century. It should be on computer, on a hub. It should be somewhere that they can just hit the button. Myopia CMV, whatever it may be, they should have that kind of information. It's the 21st century. it's there, isn't it? You know, type it into Wikipedia, for God's sake. Do something, because you are the biggest eye charity in the UK. So do something. But the big issue, let's forget about what the eye disease may be. Let's talk about the RNIB parliamentary presence. Let's talk about the people that they supposedly know are in touch with. Let's talk about how the RNIB behave in Westminster. Let's talk about what do they actually do with that parliamentary presence. The APPG, iHealth group got together last year talking about overcapacity at hospitals. I actually attended it along with Elaine Shaw in the House of Commons, and it was all very, very grand, and meeting room 18 there. Many people were there talking. But what do they do with that information? Where does it go? What do they improve with it? Have they brought down the overcapacity in hospitals? Have they put any plans into place? Have they not released that information yet? But, you know, the thing is, Stephen, with these people, tomorrow never comes. They have these meetings. And they grandly announce that the APPG are going to have these meetings about overcapacity in the hospitals, and we're going to ask questions. How great is that? How great is that? That, you know, it'd be as well to be brilliant radio presenters like yourselves and just ask questions over the air, because they all get together at the House of Commons and achieve nothing. So even if let's say the biggest eye charity in the country hasn't got all the information about all eye diseases, so we'll have to accept that they may maybe only know about 50% of them and pretend that they know about all the others. But what are they doing to help people with sight loss? How are they using their parliamentary presence to achieve anything for people with sight loss? All that I'm asking is that they get their acts together and actually stand up for people with sight loss. Whatever that condition may be, stand up for people with sight loss. Stop pussyfooting around. Don't pussyfoot. Speak your mind. So if I've got a problem, I go to the RNIB, I've got this problem, and somebody at the RNIB will stand up for me. I have not found that to be the case. Now, somebody else may say, but Chris, I had a problem and they stood up for me. That's great. I'm very pleased. But what I'm saying is, don't be selective, stand up for everybody. So that's the problem, really.
Jill, from that point of view, I mean, we know, we've heard this oftentimes, almost to the point where we kind of get fed up hearing it, but we do hear it, which is, you know, that the RNIB acronym can be changed to really not interested in blind people, and that comes up. And nobody likes hearing it. I certainly don't like hearing it. I've been at RNIB for a long time, 11 years. You've been here for...
Nearly
15 years. And I don't like to hear that RNIB is not interested in blind people, because we work for RNIB and we're really interested in blind people, partly because we are. So, you know, that kind of, I guess, for us, makes us think, well, what are we doing as an organisation, and what can we do better? And I think it's a good question that you're raising. But I think... you know, just to sort of bring a little bit of balance to what you're saying, Chris, I think there are people out there who would say, well, actually, do you know, RNIB did a great job for me in welfare rights, or job for me during the DLA campaign when we were trying to, you know, push for more people to get on disability living allowance and get higher rates, and there was a huge success in the campaign there. There are a lot of things RNIB can do and can, you know, campaign on. Shared spaces, A boards, you know, these are having real victories up and down the country. In small pockets, granted, not everywhere all the time, but these are not ruled by RNIB. These are ruled by, you know, local councils and government decisions, and we're fighting against all of that. I think that there's a lot of good that we do. I like to hope that's the case.
I would join you in saying that. That they do lots of things that are great, and I want to sprinkle whatever I say with good things as well as bad. You know, this is praise and grumble. I do have grumbles, but yes, there are many great things that they do. But, you know, you talk about A boards and shared spaces. For the past 7 years, they've been campaigning about things like that. for the past 7 years, that, as I know of, they've been campaigning about A boards and shared spaces. Now, I want people with businesses to be able to advertise their businesses with A boards. And I agree that, and I've walked into them myself. But I want them to be able to put their A boards outside. The shared spaces, when you're talking about street furniture, I always think to myself, what do you want people to do? Remove the lampposts, remove the litter bins, remove the telephone boxes, although there aren't many of those these days, but remove all street furniture and make everything flat and clear for us. That's never going to happen. The best that we can hope for is to make people aware, that's all. People with businesses, if you've got an A board, you know, just be careful with it. You know, just keep in mind that people can't see and maybe not be able to get past if you put them in a strange place. But it doesn't take 7 years, 7 years that I know of, to campaign about stuff like that. There's a lot more serious issues going on in the UK at the moment. You know, there's hate crime, mate crime. There's people committing suicide because of the benefits taken away. There are people who are very poorly, sad and lonely because of what visual impairments has done to them, and they don't know which way to turn. There's lots of political things going on. There's people being forced into work who are not well enough to go to work. There's people being bullied and pushed around from the top of the country down to the bottom of the country. It's those people that I want the RNIB to stand up and fight for and speak up for, and I'll do it with them. I want them to do a great job. I want people with problems to be able to pick up a phone, ring the RNIB and say, help me, please. And somebody will be there to help them. Not somebody at the end of the phone saying, I'll signpost you to blah, blah, blah. And they signpost them to blah, blah, blah. And I'm sorry, that person's on lunch, on leave, away. This is the kind of thing that I've experienced for 7 years at the RNIB. And then when you finally get to somebody, they've really not got the knowledge at all. Now, of course, we'll put in there that, you know, there'll be people listening to this saying, but I work there and I try my best. Well, I love you for it. Whoever does their job properly at the RNIB and tries to do what the RNIB should be doing, then thank you so much for what you do for people with sight loss. I'm so grateful. And please don't ever leave. And please spread the goodness, you know. Do the best you can to change this jaded, old-fashioned, run-down culture that the RNIB seem to have. They're jaded. They've had their day. They've had their 150 years. Well, revamp and let's relaunch. That's what they need to do. But they don't need to be planning it for the next 3 months or 6 months, as I've been told last year. It's going to take 6 months, Chris. Oh, really? Because last year you told me it was going to take 3 months. The year before that, you said that there was a restructure going on. We got this great idea, Solutions, that lost 12 million quid up to March last year, 2016-17. 12.6 million pounds was lost. You know, that 12.6 million pounds could have done so much to help so many people. They've wasted time and money, and who is accountable for it? We've got a new CEO, Sally Harvey. I've emailed Sally Harvey a couple of times. Hey, Sally, here I am. Give us a call. You know, it's the trouble with the CEO, the assistant CEO, the senior management, is that they're so far away from the rest of us down here. They don't know what's happening. They want to mingle a bit, get out of the office, get out, get a life. Do you know what I mean? Come and meet us. Sally Harvey should have spoken to me by now, and she has not. I've spoken to Fasile Hadi. I've spoken to many people at the RNIB. I've met them. I come across them. But the senior management, the trustees, the chairman, sounds great, the chairman. Where are they? I've never come face to face with these people.
You know, we've seen a lot of changes within the staff in the last few months, you know, since Sally has taken over. And I don't know if you'd agree with me, Stephen, but, you know, there certainly seems to be more connection with the staff. And from what we have been led to believe. You know, Sally is connecting with us on a Skype basis. You know, she's having meetings with the whole organization where we can all tune in. You know, something that never happened before. And she has, it's great for us because we now know what her vision is. We now know what the vision of RNIB is. And we know what, you know, RNIB are wanting us as their staff to deliver, and what the people getting in touch with this new Connect community that's been set up as well. The Connect community are getting in touch in their droves, and that is all being kind of distributed amongst the staff now. So it's great for us in the respect that we have more access now to the people who are listening to us as a radio station. Now, I don't know what it's like for the rest of RNIB, but for us, you know, we're getting, you know, countless numbers of people, you know, on emails and phones and things like that, getting in touch with us so that we can share their stories, which is what a lot of blind people are saying that they're wanting. They want to share their stories. They want to share what's happened to them, the good, the bad, the ugly. But they also want to hear other people's experiences as well. So that, I have to say, is the changes that I'm certainly noticing filtering through from Sally since she's taken over as CEO. With regards to being frustrated, I know what that's like. You, when you can see perfectly and you walk past any charity tin and, you know, you fling your coin in and you think, you know, I've done my good deed for the day, you don't really understand what's kind of going on with that particular disability because it doesn't affect you. But see, when you're at the other side of the tin and you're the one shaking that tin because it's affected you, then that's when you start to realise, you know, where you're getting help, where you're not getting help, where the downfalls are and what, you know, needs change. So, you know, I can understand why you would be frustrated with, you know, certain aspects of what's going on in your life, because, you know, there's things that could have been done for you, not just by RNIB, but by, you know, doctors, practitioners, NICE, a lot sooner.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. And it isn't just about me. That's the interesting thing. And you know, when you talk about frustration...
Sorry, Chris, can I just say, you know, three blind people here, right, having a chat. Let's be brutally frank with each other, right? Being blind is hard. You know, it's a horrible experience. And I know what you're saying, but I've said similar in the past. And usually when I say it, it's because I just don't want to bring it up. I don't want to talk about me. I don't want to talk about my eye condition because it infuriates me from time to time. There are things I just get so annoyed about. I'm sure you're the same, Jill. There must be points where you just want to scream.
Oh, listen, there's, of course. Yeah. I mean, I get very fed up with being blind. There isn't a day that I don't, you know, waking up in the morning and before I open my eyes, I'll say the same thing. Oh, please let me see. And every morning there's that little, you know, just that tiny, tiny millisecond of frustration and disappointment, and then you get up and you go on with your life and you think, well, you know, that's it, it's not going to change, time to push on and you know, do the best I can for myself and for others today. But I mean, being blind, there isn't a single day that I don't wish that I could see.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way?
Every day at some point, of course. And why shouldn't you? You know, why wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you wish to be kind of what you were? You know, younger, healthier, and you could see, and you could jump in your car and go driving off, hop on a motorbike and go whizzing off, and do all these and read the newspaper. What a treat!
Yeah,
but or a book. Of course. Yeah. But it isn't, it's never about, everything that I'm involved in isn't just about Chris Thorley and Chris Thorley feeling sorry for Chris Thorley. It's
no, but you wouldn't bring it up if you didn't have the experience, because your experience is driving
someone. Of course, absolutely, understood. If I wasn't going through this, then, you know, who would I be to say what I'm saying? All that I want is for, I find it insulting when the biggest charity, eyesight charity, sight loss charity in the UK, says that it's done something that it hasn't, and I know it hasn't. And this has been happening time and time again over the years, but no more so than the past 12 months. What happened with me over the past 12 months is I got heavily involved from when I got up first thing in the morning till I went to bed last thing at night. And I didn't care. I was okay with it. I was very driven. And I worked tirelessly. And I listened to so many documents and pieces of information. And I was very knowledgeable. And I was learning all this stuff and listening. And I was uncovering lie after lie after lie. And I'm not just talking about the NIB, I'm talking about the whole system, the NHS, NICE, clinical commission groups.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean you were uncovering lies? What does that mean?
It's interesting. This is the second time that, somebody else used the word lie the other day, and they were corrected for using the word lie. Well, untruths, like, for instance, a consultant telling a patient that a drug isn't available when actually it is. But the consultant will not apply for that drug because it's too much trouble. That's a blatant lie. You know, there's blatant lies, and I know that's happened to people. And that is a good example. Actually, that goes on so often now. The consultants, because it's too much trouble, or because they don't want to. This is the thing today with consultants and doctors, and I defend the doctor as much as I defend the patient. I want it to be like I always thought it was when I was a kid. Mum, I'm not very well. I'll take you to see the doctor. The doctor will make it better. That's how I still think. But it's not like that anymore. What it's like now is the patient goes to see the doctor, and the doctor sees that you've got an ailment, but the doctor's thinking, I can't prescribe that drug because that drug's got to be applied for or hasn't been licensed by NICE. But that drug would probably correct that ailment. But I, as a trained doctor who's done all my training, cannot prescribe that drug or that treatment because NICE, it isn't in NICE guidelines. That drug hasn't been licensed. It's off-label and not on-label. And there's all this stuff going on. So there's all this lies and cheating going on. The patient goes to see the doctor and expects for the doctor to make the patient better, and that's not always the case. There's a lot of politics behind the doctor now, a lot of weight behind the doctor, a lot of considerations, monetary and otherwise, and they have to answer for any mistakes that they make.
Use the words lies and cheating, and I wonder, do you think that helps any argument you make with using that kind of language? Because that's quite a strong accusation to make.
But it's kind of saying things like that because I think to shock and excite is a way of getting people to listen. They'll listen to words like that. In an interview last year, for instance, I used the word criminal as opposed to negligent, and I was pulled up over that. You shouldn't use that word criminal. You should, negligent would have been far better, but criminal gets more interest. I don't know. It still kind of means the same thing. If I was to hurt you, Stephen, it would be criminal. Or if I hurt you accidentally, it would be negligent. I don't know.
Well,
it's wordplay. It's wordplay.
I'd maybe argue that there's a difference between criminal and negligent. If I didn't respond to your email being negligent, that wouldn't be a crime. Do you know what I mean? So I do think language matters, though, because I know you're very keen, and it's interesting because a lot of people might hear what you're saying and not realise actually how much you want to help RNIB, and I kind of want to get into that a bit because you do want to help RNIB. You want to be supporting it to do more, and do all the things that you want it to do. So I guess my question to you is, what are the solutions to that? What do you think are the solutions? We can talk about the problems. We can talk about failings of RNIB, but what are we going to do to solve it?
Yeah, so there's many things that you can do to improve things. Communication is the big thing, communication, breaking down barriers, working with other charities, whatever sight loss charity there is in England, in the United Kingdom, the RNIB should show support for them because they're all working towards the same end, and that's to help people with sight loss. So there should be none of this competition kind of behavior. Barriers need to be broken down. There needs to be no jealousies or envy. None of that should be, there's a lot about that about. I'm using words again that may be, you know, jealousy, envy, lying, cheating, all these words, but it's actually going on out there, and somebody needs to say it and not be afraid to say it's actually going on. You eliminate all those things, get along with people. There's nothing better, I like, than being at an event and mingling with people and meeting people and talking to people and listening to people and trying to find answers. And that's what the RNIB should be doing, only on a bigger scale. They should be doing what I try to do, but on a bigger scale. Mingle, find out what's wrong, see if you can help. Imagine what a big organization like the RNIB could be doing. It'd be fantastic. Knock down the barriers, work with people, stop being so aloof, and join in. You know, so much could be done. But where the management's concerned, that are making the decisions, the executive management, those up there, let's say, executive management, what they do, of course, it's all part of management. They'll delegate down. You know, everything gets delegated down. And as they do that, the management, the senior management, get further and further away from the problem, because all that they're doing is delegating it away from them. Well, I would suggest that the senior management really do get stuck in, roll the sleeves up, bit of elbow grease, get stuck in, and show that they're getting stuck in. Now, I've got to say about Sally Harvey, she is doing what Jill said. I've noted this.
I think this is what, you know, the whole Connect kind of thing is all about, really, isn't it, Stephen? The fact that we've set up Connect now, and it is connecting us, the staff, more to the blind and partially sighted community, and they're connecting with us. So, you know, I notice it from the radio station's point of view, because, you know, we are getting to share a lot more stories. We're hearing a lot more experiences. We're getting to offer our experience as blind, not just blind broadcasters, but blind individuals.
People, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I understood. But we just want things to be better for people with sight loss. We want to uplift. We want to lift them up. We don't want them to be thinking about the fact that they're blind and visually impaired and offering them only that. We want to offer so much more for people with sight loss.
I think it doesn't matter what organization you work for, what it is you're doing in your life, what's going on in your life. There's always room for improvement, whether that be, you know, in the workplace, self-improvement, you know, whatever the case may be, there's always room for improvement, and we should always strive to be the best we can be, you know, the charity as a whole, as individuals, as broadcasters, as, you know, whatever we do, we should strive to be the best we possibly can be.
I think the RNIB stopped maybe a century ago, did they? I don't know. Maybe, as I say, they've done lots of good work, but I think the RNIB are very jaded now, very tired. I think it needs a drastic culture change.
But I think Jill's point, though, about RNIB Connect, and I've seen it, and I don't know how much exposure you've had to RNIB Connect yourself, Chris, but, you know, I mean, well, first of all, you're on the radio station, hey. But, you know, that's a positive, and, you know, you're telling your story and you're telling your views. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people will come on this program and talk about how they don't have their voices heard, when actually you're speaking to hundreds of thousands of blind and partially sighted people right now, as well as the wider sighted community and, of course, all of RNIB on its own radio station. So that's a plus point, I hope. And in addition to all of that, you know, RNIB Connect around the country doing what I think is great work. It's all new. It's all coming together. But, you know, local facilitators, meeting people, you know, starting groups and getting things underway, run by and supported by RNIB, but run by blind and partially sighted people. I think that's a really important thing. That seems to me the kind of step. It seems as if everything you're saying that you want to change is starting to happen. And the point about societies as well. You know, RNIB is definitely taking its hand away from that, well, we know everything approach, and very much changing that to, look, if your local society has the services you need, then that's where you need to go. And actually, we need to support that at RNIB rather than try and do it ourselves, which I know the RNIB has done in the past. But that is not the future aim. So it sounds to me as if it's going in the direction you want. Do you feel differently?
Stephen, I've heard all this talk before. This is the problem. It's like I said earlier, tomorrow never comes. There's lots of talk about what's going to go on across the country. It's got to happen yet. Okay, so maybe I didn't realise this was part of the Connect process, me being on the show, but okay, so this is happening. But there's lots of stuff that's not happening yet. It's all talk. Now, as I've said, for the past 7 years, I've been listening to this. There's a restructure going on, etc. And it doesn't happen. It's not happening. I hope it does. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing I would like better than for those at the RNIB to say, hey, Chris Thorley, we've proved you wrong. Look at what we're doing. Aren't we doing some great stuff? That would please me. That would truly please me if they did that. I may be cynical, but it's an educated guess that really there's a lot of talk going on at the moment. I know there's a lot of meetings going on because today, for instance, I've made 3 calls and can't get through to people because of meetings. And it really does make me laugh. In fact, I did laugh this morning. I thought, meetings, what are those meetings about? How many meetings have people got to have? People are always in meetings talking about what? Talking about people with sight loss and what they're going to do for them. Well, actually, actions speak louder than words. And all that I've ever known the RNIB do is have meetings. I've been at meetings where people have come from all over the country to be at that meeting. And I've seen them rush off after the meeting to catch the trains back home. And nothing's come of those meetings. I've seen it happen over the past 7 years. You tell me it's happened, and I will say, Stephen, I'm very pleased it's happened. The RNIB have proved me wrong. But it hasn't happened yet. And it's all talk as yet. It's all talk. Now,
RNIB Connect has happened, Chris. I mean, that's running. It's not a myth. It's real.
Stephen, I'm on the show. I've just said that, something's probably are happening. But the RNIB are a massive organisation and nothing massive is happening. Nothing great is happening. And as I say, if I go back to problems that people have got, and it's interesting that, maybe 6 or 7 years ago I was told, don't mention that, Chris. Don't mention things like that. It's not the thing to do. But people are committing suicide because of the way that they're being bullied by society these days and the establishment and the government. There is hate crime. There are people in poverty because of benefit cuts. There are people frightened to death because they're being forced to go to work when they can't do it, when they haven't got the ability or the confidence. There are many problems going on in this country now that we're all letting happen. We're accepting that these problems are happening. And it's just like, hey ho, somebody. I was on a train going out of Stoke. 2 minutes out of Stoke, the train stopped. It had hit somebody. It's happening out there. People are being driven and downwards. And it's all government policy to start with. It's all assessments, assessing people who are disabled, assessing whether or not they're worthy of benefits or whether they should be forced into the workplace. This is just the tip of the iceberg. So many people have got so many problems. And the aged, the age-related conditions of sight loss, there's an epidemic at the moment. There's a lot of lonely people out there who are in the 70s, 80s, 90s who can't see and don't know what the hell to do. Those are the people that the RNIB should be reaching and actually doing something. Not talking about what they're going to do, but actually do something. And when they've done something that's worthwhile to help these people, there'll be nobody more pleased than me. And there'll be nobody that will praise the RNIB more than I will, because that's what I want them to do. They ain't doing it at the moment. Maybe pockets of, there'll be people listening to this saying, he's talking rubbish, Chris Thorley. I'm involved in some great work, and good for you. I appreciate it greatly. Thank you so much for what you're doing, you pockets of people about the country that are doing good work. I know you're out there. And I do hear about you. I do hear about the good work as well.
So does that not prove the point, though? Does that not prove that it is happening? I mean, it takes a long time for societal change towards... I mean, we know, Jill, you know, I don't know about you particularly. I mean, I'm going through the personal independence payment process at the moment, which is an absolute nightmare.
Well, do you know something? I know you say that, but, you know, I've been through the PIP, changeover from DLA, and I was one of the lucky ones that had a really smooth transition.
Yeah, you are one of the lucky ones.
Yeah, I was. And I suppose it does happen that people do have good experiences. I had a great advisor that got everything sorted for me, that, you know, I didn't need to question. I didn't need to, you know, keep on top of people. It just happened. But at the same time, I still had to go through the kind of degrading questions about my bathroom habits and all that kind of stuff that, you know, other people are having to go through. But, you know, with regards to what Chris is saying, I think... You know, it's hard for somebody who isn't a staff member of the organisation to see what is happening. So I can understand Chris's frustration. I can understand your frustration, Chris, because you're not privy to the meetings that we are having and the en masse meetings with all the staff that we're having over Skype nowadays, where, you know, we are seeing very clear visions coming through. Now, yes, you know, every new... CEO has, you know, got a certain amount of time to prove themselves. What Sally, I think, has done, to be fair, is, you know, she's followed through with the Connect community. I think that is thriving. I think it's getting bigger and it's going from strength to strength. And, you know, I suppose we've got to kind of give her time to, you know, be able to...
Do what they say they're doing. Let's give them time, Jill, to do what they say they're already doing. Let's give them all the time in the world. Let's give them 150 years of time. Let's give them 7 years of time. Let's give them another year.
But Chris, I see what you're saying. I know where you're going with that, but I think that my kickback to that would be that when RNIB was formed as an organisation, it was a very different world we lived in. Very different. Where the organisation was here to look after the blind and partially sighted. I don't think the partially sighted were involved in it. I think it were just you were blind and that was it.
And to be fair, you know, it wasn't so long ago that people, you know, that were born blind or that lost their sight were just shoved into an asylum.
Yeah.
So we have come on leaps and bounds over the years. I know what you're saying about time. I just think Sally Harvey has been in place for such a short period of time that it's too soon for the likes of myself to, you know, put down her plans. We had a meeting with her very recently where she was very clear about her future visions. Will she follow through on them? Time will tell.
Well, and hopefully,
hopefully we don't have to wait 7 years or, you know, another 150 years, you know, but we need to sort of give her a chance, I suppose, because she is new.
And I know you want to get involved with the organisation more, and I think, I guess my question to you is, would it be helpful, I mean, all the issues you've raised, all the issues that you've brought up around, you know, the benefit system and how people are unfairly being pushed into work, and all those things are very important issues. And I know that RNIB are working on a lot of those issues. I, of course, like you, echo that I want the organisation to focus more on it, but actually, it's kind of on us, don't you think? It's on us in some ways to push that direction and say, hey guys, are you focusing on this? Because that's how this will work. It will work if we want an organisation, and I think this is the central question is, what do we want from RNIB? Do we want an organisation that looks after us, as it used to do 150 years ago? Or do we want an organisation that works with us to actually achieve what we want to achieve?
But I think this is what Chris is trying to actually do. I mean, he is challenging the things that he's not happy with. So, you know, we need people like that to be able to challenge
the
charity so that there are changes. And maybe people won't agree with you know, what Chris is talking about. People listen to me all the time and I'm sure they're sitting at home thinking, what a load of nonsense. But, you know, we're all entitled to our opinions and we're all entitled to challenge what we feel is wrong.
Well, as I say, I'm quite happy for the NIB to prove me wrong. I'd be very pleased for them if they were to prove me wrong and to help people with sight loss. And my interests are from right across the board. As I say, I've been campaigning on issues to do with drugs, the NHS, NICE, clinical commission groups. You know, I actually paid them two visits unannounced with no appointments and was surrounded by security. I put myself in many, many, many uncomfortable positions and really don't mind doing so because I feel that I can at this moment in time do that. I'm trying to make them think. I'm a provocateur. I want to provoke them into action and I want them to help you, but not tomorrow. Today. I don't want to hear talk. I don't want to hear excuses. I don't want to hear Sally Harvey saying she's going to do this, that, and the other. I want Sally Harvey to say, we have done this and we have done that. So that person out there with that weakness or disability who's struggling and on the verge of doing themselves in can suddenly say, somebody is helping me. And that's what I'm doing. So anybody out there who's in that position, I'm trying to make it so that charity, the biggest charity in the United Kingdom to do with sight loss, the RNIB, get their acts together and actually help people with sight loss. Instead of talk about helping people with sight loss, I want them to act, put things into action. Let's see them use their parliamentary presence. Let's see them do something. I'm quite happy to talk to anybody at the RNIB at any time. And I must confess that maybe this Connect thing is working, because some people have been talking to me for the past 6 months and I've talked in this manner to those people. And the interesting thing is they all agree with me. Every single one that I've spoken to agree with everything that I say, but they can't say it because they only can say that things are not as they should be. The RNIB, get it together, get your act together.
Well, Chris, keep fighting and doing what you do, because that is exactly what we want you to do, and that is certainly we want you to do here on the show, but also I know RNIB generally does as well, and you can take that to the bank. So, Chris, we are out of time, and you know I'd love to talk more about all these issues, but we only get an hour. We've only got the hour. So thank you so much for coming on.
It's been a great pleasure to talk to you today, Chris, and to hear your side of things. So thank you very much for sharing with us today here in the Weekly Connect.
Okay, thank you all, and thank you, everyone.
That is it for our show this week. We're back same time next week, because when it's Mondays at 1, Jill,
it's the Weekly Connect.
Bye.
See you next week.